At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
See, I like to start recording. I like to start recording the episode when I know Derek's about to say something, because then we get a good, like, kind of candid. Usually, the title of the episode, Derek will say something funny. Welcome back to the Handmade Podcast, episode 61. We have a special guest with us today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
It's not Jimmy DiResta.
It's not Jimmy DiResta. His name starts with a J. All right, he's not going to introduce himself. This is our friend Jordan from Two Avocados. Not one avocado. It's very important that you understand that there's two of them. And Jordan, how would you want to describe yourself? Because you're a pretty multifaceted guy. I don't want to underestimate your business and what you do.
Yeah, so I would say, thanks for the introduction, first of all. Second, I would say I'm a complete hack, and I'm making a living as a hack for the last 5 years. I'm a maker and a hack.
Nice. That's, you know, I mean, you fake it till you make it.
That's right.
But I feel like you've kind of made it already, so you've certainly done a good enough job.
And that's it?
That's all that you got to do.
So I wrap it up right now. That's all he has.
Yeah, right. Thanks so much, guys, for listening. That was Jordan. Check us out on Patreon.
Now for the after show.
Yeah, now for the after show. So, yeah, we can just go. We'll go through a little bit of our normal talking points, see what everybody's up to, and then we're going to go into a little bit about what Jordan kind of does in his hacking, in his hackiness. And Jordan has a very interesting story and a very interesting business. And there's something that we always talk about on the Handmade Podcast, because Derek, Paul, and I are all at very different stages in our sort of maker careers, right? Where I work full-time job, Derek works the full-time pizza job, and Paul has his business, which is almost separate from what he kind of started doing when we all sort of got into this thing. And Jordan, you come from a different career, but now what you've been doing for the last 5 years is really your only job, right? You don't work for anybody but yourself, correct?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, my wife controls everything, but you know.
Yeah, so you just work for your wife. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That's fine. But yeah, so what have you guys
what have we been up to?
Yeah, actually, we were all just together, so let's talk about Maker Camp quick, and then we're going to get into what Jordan's been up to.
Before you get into that, it's funny, I got a message today. Somebody asked me, did you quit your job at the pizza parlor, or are you still working to deliver pizza? And they're serious. And it's like, so I hate to break it, but I'm not at the pizza parlor. I work a different type job, but it's kind of a running joke. But no, I didn't quit my job at the pizza parlor. I'm still flipping pies.
Yeah, well, you're on a pie flipping sabbatical at the moment for your back. You can't properly levitate the pie if you've got a back issue. You know?
Yeah, well, it's hard to look up at them, but I'm flipping them. But I did go back to the pizza parlor this week, and I'm doing a short run of appearances at the parlor, and hopefully I can string a couple days together. But, yeah, that's what I'm doing. But
as a longtime listener of the Handmade Podcast, I want to say,
the first time caller,
pizza parlor job. Yeah, first time talker, long time listener. Derek's pizza parlor, he really is making pizzas and delivering them. And the after show, $1,000, it's real. So get in or get out.
Jordan was our first patron for the $1,000 bonus. So thank you, Jordan, that's for that. But actually, Jordan was the only one of us that wasn't at Maker Camp, and he missed out on an awful lot. What was your biggest takeaway, Chris? What did you have most fun with at Maker Camp?
What did I have most fun with at Maker Camp?
Well, who were you just most happy to see? What was
the big I was just happy to see everybody because it's been so long since everybody's been in one place. I'm a huge fan of the Modern Forge guys. I just like love watching those guys go and like make stuff together, and so I was watching them a lot, which was great. I thought just the whole thing was awesome, and then you know I was up there for the timber frame thing, which was in June or July, where people were making cutting the timbers for the timber frame, and I don't know that I really had an expectation of what that was going to look like when it was done, but seeing it come together and go up, it's just, it was awesome. And it really shows how good Justin Dietrich is at organizing, because it is hard to do something like that with like 60 random people. And you don't like, just to know that everything was cut properly is just shows how good Justin was at running that. Which it's like herding cats, you know. You're telling people to cut mortises, and it's not like you can just make it work if it doesn't work, you know. Like, and if you look at the timber frame, it's probably hard to tell in the photos, but like I went right up to it when there was nobody it's around, I was looking at it. It's perfect. There it's isn't perfect. Like a bad joint anywhere, dude. And none of these people have any fucking idea what they're doing, you know. Yeah. So like, I mean, kudos to Justin for planning it, starting it, running it, teaching it, putting it up. I mean, really just great. And Austin too. I mean, Austin had so much to do with it. And obviously the entire event was Austin's, it's Austin's baby. And for how Austin's like 20 years old, isn't he?
I know. I sent him a message today. I said, dude, you should be so proud of yourself. I said, the whole thing was amazing.
Yeah.
And back to the timber frame. I felt the same thing. I went over to that thing too. And I looked at it and I was like, every joint is perfect on this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like maybe one or maybe two people might have done that before, been involved with it. But I wouldn't be surprised if nobody but Justin had done it before. And it was perfect. And at first I was kind of looking at it when it was all on the ground. I was like, wow, this thing's kind of small, you know. But then I'm looking at it. I was like, it's like the perfect size. It's just like I can see it there for the next, you know, 75 years. It's going to be there.
Yeah.
And then they had the little ceremony with Aaron, which was great. And the picture that was done by Jeff and the plaque from Luke. It just, the whole thing was just really amazing. It was just really a big highlight of it. You know, also same with the Modern Forge. That was really cool. And to meet Leah, I mean, we talked for a while. I yucked it up with her, and she was just such a great personality and just, you know, just really nice person to talk to. But like you said, to see everybody, it was just like, man, I can't believe like how long it's been since we haven't seen people. It was just great. I mean, I lost my voice twice just from talking to people, you know. It was good, you know. Paul, did you enjoy talking to people?
That's my favorite part. That's why I
love it.
That's exactly why I went.
Well, everybody. we did have a fantastic pizza.
We did. Oh yeah, we did. Great. Finally, because God, I couldn't.
We're the milk run.
No.
We went to some real
Neapolitan style pizza.
Some real gourmet shit.
Yeah.
You gotta be careful. Kyle might listen to this.
Who?
Kyle. Isn't that his name? What's the guy's name? Kyle. The guy from the milk room. What's his name?
Carl.
Carl. Kyle.
Cal.
Isn't that his name? What's his name? What's his name? Is it Kyle?
Who knows?
Yeah, I think so. Every time, Paul, you should know the three times you've gotten a hot dog from there.
I don't even know
how you. He hates that place.
I mean, you know what? The pancakes are good. Besides giving me almost making me a pre-diabetic, giving me a low blood sugar, like my blood sugar crashes 5 hours after I eat them and I almost faint, which has happened almost every time I've eaten them. The pancakes are good, but other than that, I mean, it's a risk.
It's hard to screw up pancakes.
You know what?
Put him on. He just called me too.
Yeah.
Put him on.
No, I can't.
What do you mean you can't? Tell him you're on the podcast.
I can't get to the phone right now.
Hey, Jeff, you there?
Yeah.
You're on the podcast. What's up, buddy?
Oh, you guys are talking now?
We're talking right now. You're live. What do you want to tell Jimmy? Jimmy's the only one that could be listening because you're here. What do you want to tell Jimmy? Now, I'll call you back, buddy.
What? No. Are you really live?
Yeah. Yeah, we're recording the podcast right now.
Are you recording me as we speak?
Yes. Yeah, so don't say anything dirty. Keep it clean.
This is the Full Blast Podcast every Friday on the Make Green Network.
You asshole. I love him. Is he the best? He's a good salesman.
Oh, yeah, he's sharp. He's good on...
He is so quick on his feet.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's good.
On the Full Blast Podcast.
Oh, that is so
never
funny.
Never followed him until right now.
Oh,
he's
my
the
God.
Best. That is so good. He is the best. He's such a talented blacksmith too, but he's so funny because when he was making these tongs, I was watching him make these tongs at the maker camp, and I never, like, we don't see him do that kind of stuff that often, you know. Like I'm used to like looking at his knives, and like his Instagram is so much so like the business of his knives that like I forget how he has such a diverse and long background in blacksmithing, like ornamental and decorative,
yeah,
and then like steel work. Yeah, yeah, he worked
and
at CMA
Uri,
and like
he worked with Uri Hoffe, I think, or he went and learned from him. Oh, he gets, you know, Jeff's legit.
Oh, he's legit. And we had a good time making fun of everybody else, which that's my favorite. That's my favorite part is the shit talk.
Jimmy's whack pack.
If I was giving out medals for like top shit talkers, I had some new, there were some new, new people in the mix this weekend that really could hang with the best of us.
I heard about those.
Yeah. Yeah. But back to Jeff for a second. What I love about him, he's such like a purist, like with, you know, he loves the craft, but even though he, I don't want to say he blacksmiths every day, because, I mean, he says he's a knife maker or whatever, but you think he'd just be like, you know, like it just hates it because it's kind of like his work thing, but he just loves doing it the correct way. He loves, you know, teaching it being done the correct way. Mm-hmm. He just appreciates it. And it's just like, there's just no bullshit, you know, and you know, he was trying to show me to make the bottle opener, and I knew I was going to fuck that thing up, and he was going to scream at me in front of people. So I knew to step aside and said, just make me one, you know, and enjoyed watching him making it. He can yell at me another time. So,
well, the only time I've ever made a bottle opener ever is with Jeff showing me how to do it when Paul and I went to his hammer in, like, I don't even know how many years
ago.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't believe how much work it was.
It's a ton of work. It's you know what it is? It's like the number of heats, you know? And then like, it just, you're like, okay, well, like I'm close. And then it's like, well, you got to stop, put it back in the forge.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he could have
a ton of work and he didn't even do it.
Yeah. I was exhausted watching him, but I mean, obviously he could have done it much quicker if I wasn't there watching him, but still it's just, that's way too much work. And that's the problem with when you're making things by hand, you know, you'd look at a bottle and you'd be like, fucking $25, fuck you. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, that was a lot of work. Hell like, you know what I mean? Especially if you were banging them out all day, you know, and it's just, I don't know, too much for me.
I don't know. I don't know how it could be profitable.
You could crank those out, though. You're not going to be a millionaire.
But it's work. It's not like it was like heated up, banged, put a hole in it, and bent. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of work. And he gave a shit. Like, he wanted it perfectly round. And, you know, he gave a shit. Like, he didn't look at it as like, it's a fucking bottle opener. Like, he just, you know, it was cool.
Yeah, Jeff is great. I've talked to him about it a bunch of times before, but I really want to go up to his place and shoot a little like documentary on his process and his knife making. Cause like, if you've ever gone to a shop, and Derek, I know you haven't been there, but like, he's got such a process down for the way he operates. And he's like such a purpose built setup in his shop where he's got like two even heats and he's got his hand sanding area and where he does his scales and all this stuff. And like, he's just, I mean, he's like the opposite of my shop. Actually, I will say there are some extra things in Jeff's shop, but they're not even his. Like, there's nothing extra in his shop. The only extra shit in Jeff's shop is like clips.
Yeah.
Like, there's like a lathe that Jeff like has 2x72 belts like laying on. And when I went there, I'm like, oh, that's a cool lathe. He's like, yeah, it's not mine. I don't even know how to turn it on. And I'm like, it's so funny because Cliff's just got stuff. It's all business. He's all business. And I think there's something about that. You know, there's something like, there's something like to kind of learn from with that, which I think is cool.
You think you can learn from that, Chris?
Floods, though. If his shop floods, what's going to hold it down? No anvils. You know what? That's true.
He has no vices on the floor. He has no anvils on the floor.
Jeff has, I think, the polar opposite mentality.
Yeah.
Of Chris?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Jeff could throw away everything that he doesn't touch, he would.
Yeah. I mean, I'm intentionally video chatting with you guys in the upstairs of my shop where there's nothing but like a table and a refrigerator and some bubble wrap, you know, because I don't want to show you the downstairs.
Yeah. Well, somebody over the weekend asked me to send them a video of my shop so they could get an idea of what it looked like. And I'm like looking through my phone for like one I may have taken like 6 months ago. Because what it currently looks like is just fucked. Because Angela and I made so much stuff for our wedding in the shop. And then after the wedding, I had to like get all that stuff back from the venue. So it's just like everywhere. There's just stuff everywhere. And, you know, it's a mess.
Why didn't you just throw it out?
You're doing a great job of being married. You're already blaming your wife for stuff. Nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, shit, she blames me for everything anyway. Yeah. So, well, it's a disaster.
It's funny because I was just going to throw out the signs I made for my daughter's graduation from high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's a junior in college and I still have them. And like, they're personalized with her name on it. And she's like, yeah, save them. I'm like, okay. I'm like, why am I saving these signs?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're beautiful signs, but like, unless she, like, we're not going to use them at her college graduation, be like, no way, Dad, you can't use those.
Yeah,
you
know? Of course not.
So it's like, they're useless, but I'll just keep hanging on to them, honey.
Well, I was so like hands-on involved with the actual venue because it was such a shit show. I've got like the plastic bins with like the stuff in it. I've got the extension cords. I've got like, remember we made this flower ring, like that thing's hanging from a beam because I got to give it away. So it's not like I have like stuff like you're saying, like signs and shit. I have just like the mobilization stuff that I had. And then, you know, I also just have a lot of stuff in there. And then I bought even more stuff this weekend up at the Maker Camp. So now all that stuff's got to go inside. It's just,
oh, you bought a swedge block.
I bought a swage block.
I bought two of them. It's broken in two pieces. I'm sorry.
That's right. I bought.
It's gonna make a great video, though.
It's gonna make a great video. Chris Cash told me I was an asshole for welding that back together. I was like, I don't care.
The swedge block?
He's like, don't do it. He's like, don't bother. Why would you bother? I was like, because why wouldn't I try?
Would you pay for that?
Is he saying don't bother because it's a waste of time, or don't bother because you're gonna like ruin the?
No, because it's a waste of time. What am I gonna do? It's cast iron. Yeah, but what's a waste of time when you get paid to make a YouTube video? Who gives a shit?
No, that's you're in a different. They have a different mindset than him, and you're gonna make money.
Would you pay for
it?
$200.
What would it go for if it was in good shape?
I don't know.
Probably
thousand?
it's 12
prices
by 18.
Prices are so crazy.
12 by 18 by 4 inches thick. It's got to be worth. Yeah, it's got to be worth. And aside from the crack, it's in pretty good shape. So it's so funny. The guy that I bought it from, I was like, oh, where'd you get this? He bought he had a couple anvils. He had a really nice 150 pound hay button, really nice, that he sold to some kid for $700. I can't remember his name. All the shit that he had that was heavy, he got from a guy that is like an aspiring world's strongest man competitor. So this dude had all this heavy shit in his house, and it was also that he could like pick it up to like lift weird objects. I was like, oh, was the guy like a blacksmith? He goes, oh no, he was like a weightlifter. He just had all this heavy shit in the backyard, and he thinks the guy was getting it from scrapyards just as like weight to like move around.
Wow.
Oh my god.
Whatever. I mean, everybody's That's got their funny. Thing, right?
Did yeah. I ever tell you about the what? Nah, the kid
I
just
saw an acorn. Go ahead. An acorn table on How much? Marketplace today. $2,000. It's big well, yeah. acorn table. And I've been talking to face. Andrew Alexander.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey man. I'm like,
yeah.
$2,000.
He'll buy it.
On you.
He'll so, buy it.
He needs another thing.
A kid yeah, I work he with. He Yeah, he's gonna
they're
fill
filled
up
already.
Like shit.
He told me already. He's like, they're completely full.
Yeah, everything was outside. He bought one of those big tires like off a tractor to flip it, like he does like weightlifting and stuff. And the manager of the pizza parlor found out, and they brought him in. They were gonna fire him, and they were like, you know, why did you get this? And you know, what are you doing? You can't take stuff like that from customers. He's like, oh, I just got it to flip it. And they try to fire him because they're like, oh, you're gonna make money off it.
Oh,
and,
you know, no.
He was talking about just physically flipping it. They thought he was talking about flipping it for money. That's At the so end, funny. He had to give it back. He didn't get fired, and he didn't flip it.
But he bought it from a customer or from, like, where did he get
customer
it?
Customer gave it to him. It was
oh, a customer of the
job.
Pizza
like,
parlor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Half in the dirt. And they were just like, take it. And he took it, and the customer's son found out. And they're like, hey, he's trying to screw my grandmother or my mother over. And so they got involved, and they thought he was trying to make money off of it, and he was just trying to exercise. We like to keep our drivers as healthy as possible at the pizza That's parlor.
Right. Well, I mean, think about the flipping. You know, like it's a lot of physical labor. To throw.
Diabetes and obesity are a minimum requirement for the pizza parlor job.
Yeah.
That's true.
So speaking of work, why don't we go over to Jordan and ask him, tell us about his little story and how he got to where he is.
There you go, Jordan, take it away.
So I got started in making because I was in the corporate world and I hated my job and I was traveling internationally a lot. And I'm going to try and keep it short. So the real turning point was my oldest
daughter. We have time.
I have two daughters. My oldest daughter turned 4, and on her 4th birthday, I was like, man, I wonder how long I've been gone. I used to be in the military, then I was in the corporate world. And between the two, I had missed 27 months of the 4 years of my daughter's life. So over 50%, right? And I have another daughter that's a year younger than her. So I'd been gone 2/3 of my younger daughter's life and 60% of my oldest daughter's life. Real sobering event. So about 5 months later, I got the balls to walk away from my corporate job. And my wife was a stay-at-home mom at the time, so we were solely dependent on my income. But I was 26. I was 26 at the time. And we decided, you know, we have some money in the savings account, 26 years old. At the end of the day, I can go back to the corporate world in a second. They're always hiring, right? So we decided that it was worth the risk to step out and use up the savings account if we needed to and start something where I had the freedom to be with my family as much as I wanted. So that was 6 years ago. So fast forward 6 years.
How was that? How did you feel when you finally achieved that? Like was it just great being stay at home? I mean, was it tough?
Question. I mean, so it was terrible. You know, it sounds like pie in the sky. And honestly, 6 years ago, I was watching Jimmy's YouTube when there was like 50,000 people subscribed. You know, he was a nobody on YouTube. And I reached out to him and I was like, hey, man, I collect vintage machinery kind of like you do. And, you know, but I work for a corporation and I hate my job and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, hey, everybody has to do their own walk, but, you know, do what makes you happy. And watching his videos every day at work on my lunch break and stuff, I was like, man, this is miserable being here while this guy is making a living doing what I want to do. So when I walked away, I felt liberated. You know, I felt cloud nine. But I didn't sleep for probably 3.5 months. Like, I slept maybe 2 hours or an hour a night because I was panicked that I couldn't make enough money to provide for my family. You know, like, my wife wasn't working. We had two little kids, and I was like, man, I got to make it. So I'm in my garage, my 20 by 20 garage, you know, doing these big projects, and it went really well.
Well, what did you get? What did you get into when you went, when you left your job? What was like, what was the direction that you wanted to take your side business? Like, so you do a lot of woodworking and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
Where did that all come from? Like, did you have a list of clients already before you quit? And, you know, cause you don't, people think you quit your job and then you like, you announce to your friends that you are making stuff and all of a sudden people start calling you.
Yeah. You open the door and you just let them in.
That's right.
They've been waiting in line to come in the whole time.
They're waiting to bang the door down. No, that's not it at all.
Blank checks.
So, yeah, exactly. Blank checks. Yeah. So, the first commission I ever received was to build a 4-foot by 9-foot black walnut table with live edges. And not that it was a single solid piece, but that the edges would be live edge. And I charged $2,000 for that. And I think I paid like $1,400 for the material. So I made like $600. And
worked,
dude,
your ass off.
And I thought I was like, you know, king of the world. I mean, I'm like, this is it. I've made it, you know. But when I walked away, I didn't have any work. I had a large amount of savings. I'd been responsible with my money, and I only had my mortgage payment. So I wasn't like, you know, owing a bank a bunch of money. I just took every job that walked in the door. And when people would say, hey, can you make, you know, X? I would say, absolutely. But really, I had no idea what I was doing. The deal was, I just was hungry. And I thought, I'm going to do whatever it takes. I've got a minimal amount of tools. I had a table saw, like an old Delta Unisaw. I didn't even have a bandsaw. I had jigsaw, chop saw, you know, all hand tools. The only real tools I had was a planer and a table saw and a chop saw. Everything else was all hand tool stuff, whether it was electric hand tool or classic, you know, mechanical stuff. And I was happy, man. I mean, really happy. I felt like, you know, I could devote as much time as I wanted to my family and as much time as I wanted to work, and everything was going to be all right. After that first initial, like, 6 months, the first 6 months was hell on earth. You know, like, how do you provide for 4 people when you're in a town of 2,200 people? That's how many people live in my town.
That's crazy.
You're trying to make it, you know. So,
and it was all Etsy local, was, I mean, savior, for the most part. Yeah, I was going to say, you were going all local.
Months. Yeah, for the first 6 months, and then I, like, wisened up, and I'm like, all right, there's a market outside of this little world that I'm in.
Outside of Mayberry. Oh, you guys are young. I'm sorry. Andy Griffin Show, sorry. That was for our older listeners. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think Mayberry has 5,000 people. This is a little smaller. Yeah. All right. Got on Etsy, and I started marketing. I just went on Etsy, honestly, and I looked at what was selling the most in the woodworking platform, and started copying people because
you scumbag.
Yeah, copying and undercutting, because I live in Indiana, which is kind of like the place where all the hardwood trees grow. So lumber is cheap here. You know, people are like, oh, walnuts, $15 a board foot. I go right now and buy it for $3 a board foot, kiln dried, you know, size, no problem. So anyway, I started copying these like live edge coffee tables and selling those, and selling bottle openers, and just anything I could sell on Etsy to get my sales up. And that sustained me for quite some time, and really is what developed my skill as far as being able to produce a quality product.
Did you go to school? Did you go to school to learn woodworking? Like, were you formally trained at all, or where did you learn?
No, I just taught myself. I just enjoyed, you know, making like shelves for my wife and stuff for the house. So when I quit my corporate job, I was like, you know what? I want to do something I enjoy. And the only thing I know of that I enjoy that could make money is like a table saw. So that's where it was. You know, I mean, it wasn't a well thought out plan. It wasn't strategic. It wasn't anything. It was, I'm fully frustrated with what I'm doing with my life and I'm done. Let's pivot and do something else.
Mm-hmm. So all the growth that you experienced in order to make it a real job came from Etsy. Like, you credit Etsy for that?
I don't credit Etsy. I would 100% credit tenacity, honestly. Like,
well, I mean, just from I mean more from a job origin perspective. Like, you can be as good and as determined as you want, but if no one calls you to buy shit, then you know what I mean? Like what made, aside from not giving up, what gave the brand awareness to like the market to actually continue going, you know?
Yeah. So I'm in year six right now, and year one and like all the way up through year two, I did rely on Etsy for income. And I did that. And in that time frame is when I developed the skill. So I would say I had zero skill before that. And since the end of year two to year six now, I have 0% online sales, none whatsoever. It's all within a 150-mile radius of my physical location. Mm-hmm. And I don't advertise. It's all word of mouth. And I think I attribute it, I guess you're right, I would attribute that to my trials in Etsy sales as to where I developed my skill to be able to create that market. But as far as like brand awareness and stuff, you could go 20 miles from here and say, hey, do you know the business Two Avocados? And they'd be like, no, I don't know that joke. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you talking about?
Well, yeah, it's interesting how different, like you said, you don't advertise. Like, it's similar to like my business, like the shop business. Like, I don't ask for work ever. You know, like, there's nobody to ask.
Right.
Like, who do you ask to, like, make, like, oh, I really want to make this for you. You know, you eventually, you do generate that word of mouth. But there is always sort of, there's always got to be some sort of, like, kickoff to that. And even if it is just being able to tell somebody, like, oh, yeah, like, oh, could you make me a table? And they go, oh, well, where can I see some of the stuff you've made? And you go, okay, look at my Etsy. And they don't want anything that's on your Etsy. You know, like, they're not interested in any of that stuff, but maybe they get some sense of what you can do if you don't do Instagram or what YouTube or whatever. Now, if anybody wants me to make shit for them, I just, you know, you've got a catalog. We all do. We all have a catalog of
right.
stuff on the internet that acts as your resume, you know, so you don't need to
right.
try to, you don't need to have somebody have blind faith in you, right? There's something driving their confidence that you're able to do something. So, now in your sixth year, you've got your shop and your business and your list of clients. How do you then see where that is now? And how do you feel about it in year six? Because it's not a hobby anymore, right? It's your job.
That's right. Yeah, it's a job. And I have the both the privilege and the deficit, I would say. To have my shop 200 feet from my house. My shop is on my property. I built a shop that's 3,000 square feet for both my wife and I. And you know, I run a custom woodworking business, a little bit of metal fabrication, but mostly woodworking. And my wife runs an Etsy sign shop, and which I think you guys have talked about before, but mm-hmm. if you're going to buy a sign, buy it from Derek from Malden, not from Two Avocado Signs. So there's your plug right there.
Chris, can you delete that, please?
Why?
He did say Two Avocados. Could you just delete that part?
Please? I'll delete where he said Two Avocados. It'll just
yeah,
say, I'll
you.
Make it so that he said Derek from Malden, Derek from Malden,
twice.
Derek from
Malden. Yeah, twice.
Three times.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, keep
yeah.
going.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really great to be able to walk 2 minutes to my shop. in the rain or the snow or the sunshine or whatever. It's phenomenal. But when it's 8:30 at night and my kids are in bed and my mind is wide awake, I walk out here and I might work until midnight, or I might work until 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. And then I get up at 5 o'clock and recycle, do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And making as a lifestyle and as a career is amazing. I don't want to undersell it or oversell it at all. It's amazing. There is no one, except for every client you work for, that can tell you what to do. Or how to do it, or when to do right. it, or why to do it. You are your own boss. You have the full freedom to make all your decisions. You can go on vacation when you want. You can, you know, take the jobs you want and deny the ones you don't want. However, I think that if you have the personal mentality to be a successful maker, you're probably obsessive, and you're probably tenacious. And you're probably going to end up working 12 and 15 hours a day. And I know that the listeners can't see, but I see Paul shaking his head. Yes. Because he's a full-time maker, you know? And, if you have the gumption to make it, full-time, it's like Jimmy, you know, everybody worships Jimmy DiResta as a maker. And you see his Instagram, he's posting at 2 a.m. He's in his shop. He's posting at mm-hmm. 6 a.m. He's posting at 2 p.m, 10 a.m, 10 p.m. It's his life. And just very recently, we went on a vacation with my kids and my wife. And my kids asked me, hey, Dad, you want to go, you know, rollerblade? And you want to go bike ride? You want to go for a hike? You want to go do this? You want to go do that? And I said, yes, every time. And my daughter, who will be 9 in a couple months, who was 4 when I quit my corporate job, said to me, I can't believe that you're saying yes. You always say, no, I have to work in the shop. And, you know, at some point in 6 years, I've lost track of what's happened, you know, what's going on. And I guess really it's 5 years. I said 6, but I guess I'm wrong. 5. 4 + 5 = 9, not 6. So anyway, it's been 5 years, and I've lost track of the whole reason I got into this business to begin with. Mm-hmm. So
well, it's a job now.
Changes.
It's a job.
Yeah, it's a job. It's, yeah.
And there's, you know, no, well, the difference is you don't. Like, my wife is a nurse, and I have this conversation with her all the time, is that when she leaves her job, that's it. Like, sometimes she'll have a really complicated patient, and she'll tell me all about it for her 3 days that she's on her shift, and I get, like, emotionally invested. So, like, she'll get home, and then 2 days later, I'll be like, oh, Angela, what happened with that baby that had the whatever? And she'll be like, I don't know. She'll be like, let me, like, text somebody and ask. But nobody's calling her being like, hey, like, you know, what do we do? You know,
right.
That's it. It's over. You get to go home and leave.
Right.
Like, this table cracked. You got to come back and fix it.
Yep. I can't get the baby. The baby doesn't fit in the diaper. You got to come back over here.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think this was the one I don't think this is the baby that I ordered.
That's
God. I don't think this one, you know. You know, like, and it's funny because when I was a carpenter, I moved up quickly in this company from being a carpenter to a like kind of a job runner and then to being a PM. And one of the guys I worked with, I was like 26-ish, 27. Yeah, 26, 27. One of the guys I worked with was like 54. And he was like, yeah, I have no interest in ever doing that. He's like, I have no interest in ever having any responsibility outside of just getting up, putting my tool belt on, you hang molding, you put in base, you hang a door. And then guess what? At 5 o'clock, who gives a shit? If the door only has one hinge on it, don't care. Throw some blocks under it, get back in the car, and I'll do it tomorrow.
It's a lot less stress that way.
It's there's no stress. What
it's
stress could
easier.
There be?
Yeah.
And if something goes wrong, chances are it's not your fault. If there's not enough molding, it's not, you know, if you're the carpenter,
or even if
you're
it
not...
is your fault, it's like, oh, well, like the worst that could happen is you get fired and you get another job. It's like if you're in charge, it's like some mistakes can end businesses, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's why I have that's why I have so much machinery in my shop, because of mistakes that ended other people's businesses.
But if so, you know, if you're an employee, you could make a mistake that costs the company $10,000, and like, what are they going to do? Dock you ten? Like, they're not going to take it out of your pay. Like, that could be how much you're making for 2 or 3 months. It's like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it before here. Sorry, Paul, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But like, my my brother-in-law, you know, he has a successful boat business, and one of his employees was washing the boat, and he slipped on the deck of the boat. It was like a center console. And he grabbed the door and he ripped it and broke the door right in half. And my brother-in-law was having a hard time getting one. It was during COVID. And then I'm guessing the door was like $1,000. It's just a piece of Lexan, you know, a plexiglass, whatever it is. So I got it and I tried to CNC it. At the end of the day, it was just easier to make a patent and just you get a bit and route it out and stuff like that. And I charged him basically for the material and from a little bit of my time, you know. It wasn't worth it for me, but, you know, and he's like, oh, it's not your fault and you should pay for it. And I was like, you know what, but it's not your fault either. Like, why should you pay for it? Like, you didn't break this door, you know. So as long as I had my ass covered, I didn't care, but I didn't want to take it out of his pocket. Looking back, I should have. No, just kidding. But no, but you know what I mean? Like, that would have cost him real money, you know, because this kid slipped. The kid just goes home at the end of the day, doesn't worry about it. He says he's sorry, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, but somebody's going to pay $1,000 for the kid slipping and grabbing the door. Uh-huh. And you get some people that are like, well, fuck him. He makes all the money anyways, which, you know what, we'll go start your own business if you want to make all the money
on risk. All the risk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And, exactly.
You know, if you want a simple, stress-free life, just work for somebody. But if you want to be able to move up and, you know, I guess technically infinite growth, you know, you could grow businesses, you know, some businesses are worth hundreds of millions, billions of dollars that, you know, single guys have started, like Amazon or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you want something, if you want to have that opportunity, it's going to be a lot more work and it's going to be a lot more stressful, but you can go that route if you're looking to achieve, you know. Greater things, but it's okay if you don't want to do that either, because the world needs both types of people.
That's right. Yeah.
The first time, so like, I mean, everybody knows about my business to an extent, but like the first time I did a job with one of my friends that I didn't run, it felt so weird. Macklin got a job hanging like 15 doors in this house, solid wood doors for a client. And he was like, hey, you want to do this with me? I'll split it with you. It's paying whatever it was. I don't know. I think we charged him like, I'll just say the numbers. It doesn't really matter. I think we charged him like $4,000 or whatever to hang these doors, like 15 doors. And every one of them had to be fucking. Yeah. It was replacement doors. So it's not like we were doing jams and everything. All we had to do was like, but the client was a pain in the ass. He was an architect who just like hung over our shoulders the whole time. Every door had to be cut down. None of the openings were square. It was a pain in the ass, but it only took us like, I think we went 2 or 3 nights for $2,000 each. So it really wasn't that bad. But at the end of the day, the client wanted little things adjusted and fixed and all this shit. And Macklin paid me my $2,000. And then he had to go back like 3 or 4 more times and fuck with the doors. And at first I was like, damn, like that really sucks. And then I think about all the, you know, at that point, Mac and I had done probably 10 jobs together. And I was always the guy that had to go back and fix all the shit that got screwed up or wait for a delivery or get up early or stay in late and all this stuff. And I was like, man, it's nice to work for somebody else and just get paid. You know, it's nice to just have to show up and cut the doors and hang them, you know, like not have to run the job. But at the same time, you know, like there's something about controlling your own destiny when like you get to make the prices and you get to get whatever you want out of it. And then at the end of the day, I didn't get the connection with that client. You know, that guy wouldn't recognize me if he saw me on the street. So if he had another $20,000 worth of work, I'm not getting it. Mac's getting it. That's the same thing that happens at my business now, where like all my guys that come and work with me, I pay them all really, really well. Not like employees, I pay them like partners. But at the end of the day, nobody knows them. You know, like nobody calls them for the next job, right? They call me. And then the next job, a lot of the times, doesn't have to do with them, you know. So then they're out of that next one.
It's funny. I had an uncle that was very well off, and they lived in a very nice neighborhood, and they lived there for ever since I was a little kid till I was a teenager, and then they moved. And they moved to this beautiful house right on a golf course. And it was just real nice. And my adult life, they always lived there until he passed on. But, before you passed, we were talking. And I asked him something about owning the house. And he goes, "Oh, we don't own this house." I'm like, "You rent?" He's like, "Oh, yeah." He goes, "I've never owned a house." I'm like, "You didn't own your last house?" He's like, "No." He goes, I don't want the headache." Yeah. And I'm like, "Really?" And this guy, I mean, he was very well off, but he never wanted the headache. He goes, "If something goes wrong, I want the ability to call somebody and never be bothered." And yeah. I was like, nowadays, I think it's different. Back then, I mean, we lived in our house I grew up in for, 35 years, So nowadays people move around. Back then people didn't. So it was different, but nowadays you can't see people doing that. But he just never wanted to be bothered owning a house. And that's what people did. And,
yeah. And, I mean, as a landlord, I understand, because every time the fucking toilet breaks, who gets texted at 8 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
9 o'clock at night. Absolutely. Like, "Oh, this is broken." I'm like, "God damn it."
Yeah. Yeah. It can be a nightmare. Yeah. So Jordan, where are you at now? What are you doing now? So how's business and how's life?
Yeah. Before we proceed on to that, I want to touch on what Chris was talking about. As a full-time maker, you're fully responsible, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'll never forget, man. I did this job. It was a walnut live-edge bar top. It was like a pass-through window from a kitchen to a dining room. It was for a couple, and the woman's name was Jenna Bennett. And by the way, if you're a custom maker, the person you're targeting is the wife. You're not looking to do business with the husband. You're looking for the wife, right?
That's right.
Because she's the one wanting to do the stuff that doesn't really produce any ROI. It just produces value for her to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what this job was. Maybe $5,000 or whatever. But it's a 14-foot live edge bar top with some little returns on both sides. Walnut, black walnut. And here in Indiana, black walnuts, dime a dozen. So it's pretty affordable, pretty easy to find. But a 14-foot log is not easy to find. So I find a log where I can get one piece of a live edge. It's 14 feet long, no breaks. And I use it. And the rest of the bar top, which is maybe 30 inches deep, I made out of other walnut, just to fill it in, glued it up. And I install it when they're not home. They gave me the code to their house. I walked in, I installed it, no big deal, left. They'd already paid me, all's good. About 10 days later, she sends me a text. And she says, "Hey, this is beautiful and it's absolutely perfect. But I don't like the butt joints. There's nothing wrong with them. They, there's not a big gap. There's nothing wrong whatsoever. I just don't like that there's a butt joint. I wanted solid wood from end to end. 14 feet long. So the first thing I do is I refund her 100% of her money. 100%. Because I'm like, "Hey, you know what? No money is worth that." Then she says, "I appreciate the refund, but I'd really like the right thing installed." So at my cost, I go and I source 14-foot walnut, and I take the top out and I make a new top and put it in. Now, because of that customer service,
at Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand. and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
I ended up doing like a $25,000 job for them, so it worked out fine. But as a maker,
doesn't always work out that way.
No, right? Not at all. And as you're fully responsible for the customer service, and whether you want to like it or not, customer service is the only thing you can offer over someone going to IKEA. Like, if they can go buy a $300 bookshelf at IKEA, I'm going to make the same thing for $1,000. All I have is customer service. You know, they don't care as long as it looks pretty. So just to your point, Chris, I want to say, like, you know, if you're a full-time maker or you're thinking about being a full-time maker, be ready, because it's not sunshine, rainbows and roses every day. Some days you lose, you know, $2,500 on a walnut bar top.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And that, I mean, I don't know what kind of drawing you gave or what kind of plan you gave for that job, but that goes back to, like, anything I build for anybody that is custom, they get at the very least a Google SketchUp drawing of it that shows every seam on the project. Yeah. So there's no question. Like, if someone, like, wants a frame made out of steel, which I get a lot of these art fabricating jobs, which are like, oh, I need frame out of steel. And sometimes I'll make it and they'll be like, oh, you didn't miter the corners? I'm like, no, look at the fucking drawing. If they weren't mitered on the drawing, why would they be mitered in real life? That's not, you know, like, it's just, you know, and if you wanted a miter, then you had to specify. So, like, in an instance like that where the drawing's signed off on, I definitely still, there's definitely still a benefit to giving the client what they want or their money back or whatever, making it right 100%. But there is a certain sense of acknowledgement that I think needs to come from, and you said this client was understanding and it wasn't, they weren't like trying to kill you over the cost. But there's a certain sense of acknowledgement that I always like to get out of someone to say, like, well, this is exactly what I told you what you were going to get. And I understand that you're, this isn't exactly what you wanted, and that's okay. We'll make it right. But just understand that, like, this is, it's, you got what I put on the drawing.
And I, you know, I want to be fully transparent. I knew there was work to come down the road.
So yeah,
I've been over backwards for this client. Like, but to be fair, at that point in time, that was probably my third year. I didn't provide elevations or drawings or sketches.
And
that job was the one, like I said, I'll never forget it. That's the job that taught me, like, all right, from now on, full disclosure, before I ever take a dollar from you, here's what you're going to get.
And that's why when you go with a professional, it's more money. You know, because they doing that, you know. I remember this old house years ago, somebody wrote in, they asked Tom Silver about giving free estimates. And he goes, I wouldn't know. I've never done it. He goes, my time's too valuable. He's like, if I am going to somebody's house for 2 hours, I'm charging them. He goes, you're going to charge them anyways with the job, so I'm just up front with them. And it always struck me, because it's like, you know, that's why, you know, when you're a business owner, things cost more, right? Because you're paying for your company vehicle, you're paying for your insurance, you're paying for the time you're doing the drawings, you're paying for the program that you did the drawings with, you're paying for the pencils that you did the drawing. You know, it doesn't stop. You're paying for every goddamn thing, you know, the stamps to mail it to them. So it adds up. You know, when you're just a weekend hack, you can just be like, hey, yeah, if I'm making $40 an hour, I'm happy. You know, and there's a big difference, so...
Right. Well, and I think, Derek, we were talking about this earlier on the phone. It's like, you know, if you're an employee of a company or a corporation, you pay 13% income tax. Just kind of as a general rule, you know, it fluctuates based on where you live. But let's say 13%. If you own your own business and you're paying yourself, guess what? You're paying 26%. You're paying employer and employee contributions. So really, you know, you're only making 74%. Of what you're charging before expenses of any kind. And, you know, like what you said, where's your insurance? Where's your 401k? Like,
yeah.
When I tell somebody, hey, you know, I'm making this number up, but hey, I charge $150 an hour for labor. Well, where do you come up with that number? Pretty easily. You know, I've got $75 in expenses and overhead, mm-hmm. and 75 goes to me and my family for my, you know, skills and abilities. And, you know, it's,
I like to end the conversation as soon as the question of the rate comes up and just go, no, you know what? I don't think this is going to work out. Sorry, I just don't think it's going to work out. You ever seen that Instagram post that it's like $500 client asks for an itemized receipt and the $5,000 client says the check's in the mail?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, like,
but you know what it doesn't say? The $5 million client doesn't ever pay.
Well, no, they don't pay the last 10%. That's what it is. Yeah, they don't pay the last 10%.
And you just put a lien on their
That's right. That's when you when you get the liens. That's when you put the liens.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean it's very tricky. So there's just like a lot of different things that go into that transition, right? From like the full time to the part time. And Paul, you run like a business that's a real business where you guys like, you know, it's probably going to take a lot for you to get up and say, all right, we'll do this for you tonight at 10 o'clock at night, you know, because you guys operate like a legitimate, like 9-to-5 business, where it was 9-to-5 until you guys started getting a little busier. Right now you're 10 to 10, or 9 to 11, but it's like,
when, like, so, whenever.
So like Derek and I, like our only opportunity to make that business operate is after hours. So there's, I feel like the, how like beholden to your client you are changes when you kind of make it a full-time thing, but there's still so much extra shit that you have to do running a business. Like what Jordan was saying, where like, you got to do the drawings, you got to do the driving and the estimating. I mean, I know how much goes into your estimating, Paul, cause you guys have to go to the sites and look at all this stuff. Like, oh, you got to put steel there. How are we going to get a crane in here? How are we going to get it? Like, you, the steel might fit in the building, but the machine to put the steel in might not make it to the driveway, you know?
Yeah, there's like, so how much.
There's so many variables that add into it. So like, so Jordan, so you have this revelation in Colorado with your daughter, and you really want to become a professional rollerblader. So what's how do you resolve that? How do you resolve the lifestyle? Well,
it's roller derby, dummy. Yeah. He wants to do.
Got it. I know Indiana, especially a town with 2,200 people. You guys probably have a pretty significant roller derby population.
you can beat your sister and your cousin all at once.
That's right. That's right.
No. When I decided I wanted to be a professional roller derbyist, I decided like, hey, man. Maybe I've lost sight of what I started all of this for. And something that we haven't discussed is that my wife, in tandem, about halfway through this last 5 years, she decided to start a sign company. It's at Derek from Malden on Etsy. And she grew it enormously.
Thank you, Dan.
And yeah, you're welcome. And and
she grew it enormously, unlike Derek from Malden.
Yeah, Derek from Malden doesn't know what enormous means on any level.
Exactly, so exactly.
We have 4 part-time employees, my wife and I, that run that sign business. And we kind of decided, like, hey, you know what? We can kind of easily pick that up and move it anywhere we want. So let's do that. Let's double down on that. Focus on that and focus on our family, because the reality is I'm 32 years old and I have the rest of my life. You know, I have the next 35 years or 30 years or 25 years or whatever you want to target to work and make an income and build a retirement. And right now, though, I only have 9 years left, maybe, with my kids. You know, in 9 years, they're going to leave my house for sure. They're going to go to college somewhere. They're going to, you know, move away, get a job, whatever it is they decide to do or whatever the world looks like at that time. In 9 years, they're going to do that. And I only have 9 years to do that with them, but I've got 30 years to work. So maybe the next 9 years, I don't make 6 figures. I don't, you know, build these huge projects on a commercial industrial level that I can walk by with them and say, hey, check that out. Dad built that. You know, sure, Dad built that, but he didn't rollerblade with you or go to the pool or have lunch with you.
Yeah, they won't give a shit about what you built. They'll just be pissed off that you didn't get to do these things.
Yeah, right? Like, Dad didn't ride the bike with me. Dad didn't take me out to mow the grass, right? Like, shit that you would never think is important to a kid is important to a kid. And so I just, you know, a couple weeks ago I had the revelation, like, hey, man, I've lost sight of what really matters, and I'm not going to do that for the next 9 years. Or maybe in 3 years, I'll be back on your podcast saying, I'm an idiot. I did this, and I should have done X. You know, I did Y, I should have done X. But I think that a pivotal part of being a maker is being willing to change and willing to pivot and willing to take everything and throw it away and start over, you know, because you're not afraid. You can always make something on any scale. You might make a birdhouse for a YouTube video that gets, you know, 500,000 views. Or you might make a birdhouse for your neighbor who is handicapped and enjoys watching birds, right? It doesn't demean your status as a maker at all. Whether you're making for profit or making for views or making for yourself, it doesn't matter what you're making. If you're a maker, you're a maker. That's it.
Well, that's the beauty of building that business versus building a career, is that you can't just wake up and go and get a high paying job. You know, like, in some instances you can, but in general, you can't just like go out and get paid tomorrow and work one day at another job because you feel like it. But when you cultivate the skills the way that, you know, all of us have, you can just decide, like, hey, you know what, my corporate job is great or it's not so great. And you can go, I'm just going to go back to woodworking. And you don't forget all the woodworking stuff. And you're not beholden to another new boss where you have to work your way up in a company and do all the bullshit that comes with having a corporate job. You know, even if you're great at what you do, just getting the hang of a new company experience is such a pain in the ass. Every job I've ever had, the first week, I've always thought, like, I fucking hate this. There's never been a job that I had where in the first week I wasn't like, this wasn't for me, you know? That just comes along with getting a new job and being like, oh, I got to get used to, like, this and that and the other thing, you know? It's like,
Yeah, just agree with you. When I joined the military, so I got on an airplane, flew to Texas, and at about 2 a.m. that same day, or, you know, the next morning, whatever, I'm standing stark ass naked with 59 other guys in a room being yelled at by a guy wearing a Smokey the Bandit hat. And I'm like, oh yeah, I just fucked up big time, right? Not to discourage anybody from joining the military, but I'm like, oh, this was a mistake. Like, didn't even take a week to realize. About 6.5 hours, you're like,
oh, I have a feeling that the other 59 guys might have had the same thought.
I can see Pinto run into the recruiter's office.
But I'm in
Pinto, you're not on mute.
Pinto, you're mute.
You're not on mute.
Not muted.
Jesus Christ.
Tell your mother we'll be home in a little while.
You're still not on mute.
Or put your supper in the oven.
I pressed mute on my microphone. Am I not even connected to this microphone?
I don't think so.
You're not. You're using your AirPods as
your
microphone.
Oh my god, I'm using my AirPods the entire time.
That's all right. You've been very quiet.
It's a good thing that porno you're watching didn't come through on the sound.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Jesus Christ, what a nightmare. Whatever.
It's fine. Typical. People expect this.
Yeah.
This is the
I got a lot of stuff going on right now.
Is he still making
he's still on the phone?
No.
Well,
I'm not on the phone.
All right.
All right, so back to where we were. So Jordan, so keep us going through the story. So where are we at right now?
Yeah, so the conclusion of the story is I've decided that my custom woodworking business, which to be transparent, but not overly transparent, produces well over six figures net profit every year. Mm-hmm. I'm walking away from it on December 31st. I already have commitments through the end of this year. And I had a couple that were into January and February of next year that I called and said, hey, sorry, here's your deposit money back. I'm done.
I'm cutting my hands off.
A few recommendations. Yeah, right? Like, exactly. I'm cutting my hands off. I got the table saw on high, and it's not a saw stop. I'm cutting the table off.
That's right. How did they react to that? Let me ask you that, because I deal with I don't take any custom work pretty much anymore, and I get a lot of really, like, a lot of unhappy responses to that.
So one of them was what they described as, quote, severely disappointed. And I just said to them, I said, listen, I'm not going to tell you anything you don't need to know, but the long and short of it is that my family is more important than my career or mm-hmm. my, you know, monetary gain. And they didn't, after that, they said nothing negative. The other one was quite a problem. But you know, I'm like, hey, at the end of the day, I'm giving you your money back, and you signed a contract that said I could keep all of it with, you know, for no reason. That's the other thing I'll tack on here is if you think you want to be a maker, step one is consult an attorney and have a legal contract drawn up that's, you know, kind of ambiguous regardless of the job. You can have each client sign that binds them to giving you at least the money you have invested in material without recourse. That's been pretty pivotal for me in a couple of situations over the last 5 years where a large corporate customer has tried to back out and not pay me my money, but they signed a contract. So I would recommend consulting an attorney if you're considering being a maker. Anyway,
how'd the kids react?
Yeah, so I think that the kids would host a party for 1,000 people if they could.
They're really excited.
You know, which, to be fair, they're pretty young, so they don't know. You know, they don't remember what it was.
They don't know they're not getting any Christmas presents next year. And yeah. You're going to be sleeping in the car. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. They don't know that that cardboard box in the refrigerator, we saved it for a reason, you know. Mm-hmm. That's for a family of four.
Yeah.
They're excited, but they're also nervous, you know. My oldest daughter has expressed to me more than once that she's nervous for me and for my wife that we're making this big change, you know, moving geographically 1,000 miles, kind of pivoting our career focus and our family focus.
Mm-hmm.
She's old enough to realize that, like, it's a big monumental change. So it's different. It's a weird thing to have kids that have an input and really affect your decisions.
I bet.
Well, I give you a lot of credit, dude, because it's... you know, something I've dreamed about for a long time, and, you know, where I feel like I could possibly do it, I still could never bring myself to doing it. So I give you a lot of credit, and you're 100% doing the right thing. I remember the night you called me up, and you were driving home from Colorado, and, you know, your family was in the car, and you just sounded like a beat man, you know, like you're just like, you know, just like you've had it. And it just was, like, real solemn. But, you know, I give you credit, you know. And I think, you know, like you just said, like we said that night, you know, 3 years from now, you're going to be saying, what the hell was I thinking? Why, you know, but at least you're taking the chance, you know. You may be doing that. You might be doing that in a year. But like you said, you could always go back to this. You're taking the chance. You're doing what's right for you and your family. And, you know, you did it, you know. I mean, so mm-hmm. I give you credit. I'm jealous, but that's my bit. It. Yeah.
And so. You know, you're exactly right. I felt defeated. You know, defeated man, that's the right term for that 15-hour drive.
Yeah.
From A to B. I just felt like my kid said to me for the first time, you haven't said, I've got to go work in the shop. Like, that just completely wrecked me on a level that I wasn't ready for. But I think part of being a maker is that you're ready for change and you're adaptable and you're willing to overcome obstacles and, you know, controversy. And if I didn't do this, I wouldn't be a real maker is kind of how I feel. You know, the future of making is limitless for anybody that wants to do it. The four of us can attest to there's plenty of monetary gain and personal accolades that come from making out there in the world. And we're geographically, we're all located differently, and we all, I think, could attest to the same thing. So that's the other thing too, is like, hey, if you want to be a maker and you're in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, guess what? It's possible because of platforms like Etsy, where you can make a unique product and market it and sell it to 200,000 people who you've never met or never seen or will never see in your lifetime. The sky's the limit, literally, on making. But, you know, my personal experience and advice is, hey, if you have a family, maybe consult them on what your life is like and what your quality of life is like.
Ask them what they think about it from time to time.
Yeah, because nothing has changed from 5 years ago. When I walk out here and turn on the lights to my shop and I see this 3,000 square foot shop that I built from a two-car garage that's full of, you know, thousands of dollars of tools and CNC equipment and material and everything at my fingertips to do whatever I wanted, I feel so satisfied and I feel so charged with electricity to make something. But the minute that I think about what my daughter said to me, none of that even matters.
So So once you go back into your corporate life, right, and you do you want to say what industry you work in or no? I don't actually even know.
No, it's fine. So I got out of the military. I had went to night school for engineering, so I went right into engineering as a defense contractor. Then I got out of that and I went into commercial banking and business development for a bank. And then I, you know, went on to woodworking. But I had thought that I was going to go back in that corporate world, but what I'm going to do is try to refocus my attention on online retail. So that's kind of the future for me.
And what do you, when you say online retail, so you're going to work for a company that has a presence already and as a consultant or something, or are you going to start a new company?
No, so our company, Two Avocado Signs, which is, you know, again, inferior to Derek from Alden.
Not even close.
We're going to,
It's unbelievable that you guys still even bother to operate.
Right, right. We are going to kind of double down on the online portion of that business because we figured out that the time, you know, that would be need to be invested is minimal enough that we could still have a normal life with our kids.
Oh, got it. Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
And so I ask this question as someone that still has a full-time job. Like, I never gave up the job, but I do have the fully functioning fabricating shop. Would you ever move so to give yourself the freedom of being able to make stuff that you want to make involves making content, right? Because now we're in this amazing time in the world where you don't have to do shit for anybody. And that's you right. can just make whatever you want and somebody pays you. Actually, everybody that watches pays you. They just don't realize it because every view counts, you know, as some money in the bank. So do you ever see yourself going in that direction just because I can see exactly the, you know, and it's not hard to understand the passion that you have for building stuff, right? And every time you walk into your shop, you're excited and you want to make stuff. But the problems that come with owning a business are all the things. The problems that come with running a business don't come from your ability to make things. They come from everybody else. You know, like
that's right.
the problems with you making a table, if the table doesn't come out exactly how you envisioned it, you don't give a shit. It's your client that's going to be upset about it. And that's where the problems are. So do you see yourself like ever moving into that content world in order to generate revenue? Because I look at my business and my job is not something that I'm giving up anytime soon, but I don't want to make anything for any clients anymore. I have no interest in working with clients next year at all. There'll be hopefully none. But my business isn't going anywhere. My business will exist on the internet. My business will figure out a way to make money. I'll probably make more money next year than I made this year. And I'll do less work for other people. So I don't know. It's just an interesting, I look at your life as I look at your situation. It's the perfect opportunity to pivot into that.
Yeah. So, first of all, congratulations. If that's your scenario where you're going to make more money next year than this year and have zero clients, that is the real
dream. I hope so. You know? But I also still have my job, so.
Yeah, yeah. We want to talk about your pizza parlor. You were a Domino's, Derek's a Pizza Hut. Yeah.
Something like that.
But, you know, I've thought about the content creation. I've talked to Derek at length about it numerous times. But, and I have a whole list of things that, like, hey, no one's made this yet. I could easily make this on camera and do well and... we're fortunate that my wife was a professional photographer for several years. So we have literally tens of thousands of dollars of camera equipment, which you don't even need anymore. An iPhone 12 will do just as good as, you know, anything we have. But, I've thought about it and I don't want to say no, and I don't want to say yes, because, honestly, I just, you know, what Derek said was exactly right. I felt like a broken man, the foundation of the rest of my life, or at least the next decade, is 100% my kids. And, you know, money is important, and money gives you the freedom to do lots of things. And a six-figure salary is amazing. But at the end of the day, $30,000 and kids that feel like you gave them the attention they need is worth 10 years of my life. So I'm not saying I'm going to make 30 grand the next 10 years, but what I'm saying is that for the last 10, the money was the focus. And for the next 10, it's completely in the background.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that I don't think anybody, well, not anybody, but very few people in the making sort of universe have had. I mean, you're very fortunate, right? And it's not, you're not lucky. You work hard, and that's why you have what you have, right? So I think very few people have had that conflict where they have to go, hey, you know what, like, this is the dream job. I have to take a step back from it. But you see it more and more with, and it's you know, similar but different, but we just have a view into these people's lives. Like, there are a couple of YouTubers who have done that, right? Guys that have built huge channels, and then one day they're just gone because they need to go back and focus on their lives. Like the guy who passed away a couple years ago who, shit, what was his name? Oh my God. You guys know who I'm talking about.
Too. Oh, Grant.
Grant. Yes.
Oh. Yeah. King of Random.
Oh. King of Random. King of Random. Like, of Random. He ushered in his guy. He got shit from his viewers, and he had to go back and say, listen, like, here's why this guy is here and not me. And eventually they got over it, and so he could spend time with his family. And then he crashed his paraglider into a fucking mountain, and it's very sad and terrible that that's the way he went, but I guarantee you that before that he was having a great time. Up until he wasn't. But you know, I think that, like, so many people, myself included, right? You chase the dream, and you take every job, and you do everything you have to do, and then one day you have to take back and have that sombering moment where you go, okay, like, I gotta slow down. So I'm very interested in seeing kind of the next year for you, how it goes, right? And then I always do this to Derek, and he knows that I've complained to him about the content that he makes, but I think your story is the kind of thing that launches a content avenue, because it is a story that people don't normally, you don't normally hear about someone who quit their job and went back. Everybody's got the YouTube video on their channel, like the I quit YouTube video. That's like the everybody wants to make that one day. They're like, today I quit my job. I was a software engineer for 30 years, and now I'm going to be a Twitch streamer. Good for you. What happens when becoming a Twitch streamer becomes so boring and your wife is so sick of hearing you scream at kids on the headset that she wants to leave you and you just have to go back to working your normal job? No one ever talks about going back to their job. So thanks for sharing your story and your experience, because I think it is something that people don't really think about. And I think that it's something that when you build redundancy into your business, you have to think about what happens when you don't have time to do anything, you know, which is why I'm moving away from client work, right? Because I'm married and I work a very much full-time day job, and then I run a full-time business on the side. How do you do everything and have a life? So
and the little Zeps are on their way, right?
No little Zeps just yet. Thank God, no little Zeps. If I could just go right into like a 16-year-old version of myself, that would be a really good employee to have. But it's gonna take a little while for me to get to that point. So thanks so much, Jordan, for telling the story. So now as we transition back into our traditional handmade podcast ending, Paul Pinto, tell me what you've been watching before you run out of the car. Paul's got to leave early. What's on your watch list?
In 2 seconds.
Watching, what have you been watching?
Did I say The Sopranos last week?
No. Did you watch The Many Saints of Newark?
I've been watching The Sopranos. No,
yes. So you're trying to get there is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm trying to get there. But, nice. So The Sopranos.
Nice. Everybody watch The Sopranos. Paul, see you later.
Goodbye, and he Paul. Forgot thanks to mic his...
All right, there we go. Now he's just out of the car, and he hasn't muted his mic. It's fine. Derek, what have you been watching?
He's an idiot. I can hear myself echoing.
All right, I'm gonna bounce him out. How do I bounce him out?
Did he leave his phone in the car?
He left. So he probably put his AirPods on his laptop so I can hear my voice. Oh, there we go. He's back.
Yeah, there he is.
Come on. Cut it out. Turn it off. There we go. Now he muted it. Okay.
There we go.
All right. Good job.
What a funny bastard.
What have you been watching?
It's funny. Thanks, Jordan, for that. It's, you know, that goes back to the old be careful what you wish for type thing. You know, it's,
yeah.
And that's kind of. I'm not using that as an excuse why I'm not so anxious to do it, because I would love to leave my job. But, you know, my job pays well, and it's, you know, and it's a steady job. It's not going anywhere. Everybody eats pizza all the time. So it's just not, you know, I don't want to leave it and then be like, what the hell did I do? You know, no matter how much Jimmy tells me it's best for me, it's like, I'd be sick thinking of that. But no, thanks, Jordan. It was good to hear. But let me see what I've been watching lately.
Yeah, I mean, even just like on that, right? Like when I started my day job 2 years ago, the job was supposed to be for 2 years.
Yeah.
My boss called, said to me, sign a 2-year contract, get us through this development, and then, you know, adios, have a good life. You know, like go do your thing on YouTube. And now 2 years later, I probably could quit my job and just make content, because based on the content that I was able to make this year, which is about half of what I wanted to make, if I would have doubled just that, I would have been fine. And, you know, but my contract just got renewed with my job, because my career at my day job took a path that I never could have ever gotten anywhere else. Like opportunities to do shit that I'll never get again. And I always have this conversation with people with more traditional careers, where if you're a plumber and you want to stop being a plumber, you could always go being a plumber, you know, or if you're a nurse, like my wife, if she quits her job tomorrow, she's still a certified nurse, right? So she could go and decide to be a nurse again. My career is so unique. There is no other, like, I work for a hedge fund. I talk about it all the time. There's no other hedge fund that's going to hire me to do exactly what I do, because no hedge fund operates the way that mine does, the one that I work for does.
So yeah, nobody's going to pay you to do nothing.
Exactly. No one's going to fly me around the world and pay me to just be this handsome in the Dominican Republic. you know. Yeah.
Tell the hedge fund if they're looking for a guy with a full head of hair.
That's right. So funny enough, the hedge fund is actually looking for the opposite of that, because today I told my boss that I wasn't feeling well, so I was going to CVS to get some allergy medication, and he said, "Don't you know that'll make you lose your hair?" And he said, "Why don't you just give up already and shave your fucking head and get a tan?" That's what he said to me, because everybody at the company for the most part is just bald. So I said, no, I still have a little bit of time left.
There's a guy in the cornfields of Indiana.
That's right. But no, Derek, like going back to what you were saying, right? Like you can't like, and especially too, like you've built a seniority at the pizza place it offers certain luxuries that,
you know,
the other pizza places,
12 pepperonis instead of 10 on your pizza. I mean,
that's right.
It's a good deal.
Yeah, no, it is. And I got to remember that. And, you know, I'm very blessed to have the job I have, because nobody's going to pay me what they pay me for doing what I do, you know. So, I mean, you know, the grass is always greener type thing as well, you know.
Yeah. I mean, get real with the listeners here. You and I, we're close enough. We've talked about this a lot. Yeah. How many years you have left in the parlor, you know?
Yeah, not many. I mean, regardless, my days are numbered there, you know. So I don't have much time either way, you know, whether this show works out or it doesn't. I'm at the end, you know, I'm past the back nine, you know. I'm halfway out the door. So, you know, things happen the way they're supposed to in life sometimes, you know. But my pick for the week is going to be a perfect compliment to this, is the Samurai Carpenter. And I don't know if anybody's been watching him building his little house out on the on his island. And Jesse's a great guy, and you know, a lot of people get rubbed by him the wrong way from his videos, and you know, some people can't understand a lot of that's just shtick. I mean, not so much now, but before he used to be kind of really full of himself, but he is a talented guy. But I talked to him over the weekend. He had called, I meant to tell you that he said hello, Chris, but but make his camp.
Hi, Jesse.
He called, and you know, he's just getting sick of the way things are going and wants to start a new life, you know, and just spend it with his, you know, family. He has a son that has disabilities, and, you know, he just wants to spend time with his family. And I just, you know, I think it's great what he's doing, you know, and I hope he does it. He wants to live out there full time. He doesn't know if he's going to be able to, but, you know, I've just been really enjoying watching the videos, getting all his stuff out there and moving his dock. He built that dock. I don't know if you watched them, Chris, but
built it and moved it. Yeah.
Oh my God. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. You know, and it's just funny, but I don't know. He's just crazy, but that's my pick, the Samurai Carpenter.
Jesse's
a great guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He is. He really is. He is. Who are you watching, Jordan?
I'll tell you what, man. I was looking through my YouTube watch videos here, and it's a long watch, 43 minutes. But Frank Howarth, man, How to Woodturn the Earth. I don't know if you guys have watched it or not, but
no, I haven't.
It's on my watch list. You
know, he's absurd. Frank is absurd. Like, I don't know how many months he put into this project, but in the video he lays out kind of the timeline, and it's several months, but man, what a perfectionist to CNC out all the parts, glue them all together, and make a real depiction of the globe. Like, it's unbelievable. Extremely talented, and should inspire just about anybody.
Yeah, he's awesome. It's amazing, like, watching his work evolve too over time, like, and the different stuff he tries to do and do for himself, you know. And I think one of the things, I watched some of that video, the scale of it was not realized in the thumbnail at all. I thought it was like, like the size of like a snow globe.
Me too.
But it's like the size of a basketball. Ornament. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought it was like an ornament.
And, you know, to be amazing. Fair, like, if you don't appreciate his skills as a maker, appreciate his skills as a videographer and a photographer.
That's what I was going to say. Every facet of his stuff is amazing. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So
I wonder how many people have offered to buy that from him privately. knowing what we know about our friend Bobby Duke, who gets like probably like hundreds of inquiries a day to buy his art, you know, I wonder, like, somebody's got to be hitting Frank up and saying like, I need this, you know?
Yeah. Here's a six-figure number to buy your globe. Like,
I mean, seriously, Bobby gets crazy offers for stuff that he makes, and he's like, nah, I'm all set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best thing that you can do to piss a rich person off is tell them they can't have something.
Yeah. And there's a bonus add in for Bobby. Like, I watched maybe 2 days ago his video of him taking a pool cue or a pool ball and making it with a Black Widow on it, which is like a 3-year-old video, but I'd never seen it.
Yeah.
But man, that guy is so talented.
Do you know why he did that?
Watching him, you should.
Because he did the skull one. And somebody was like, that's not that impressive. So he did that. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, Bobby's amazing. So.
He's great.
It's funny. He actually, I hate to name drop, but I talked to him today and I asked him why he didn't come to make a camp. He goes, nobody invited me. Nobody invites me anywhere, he said. I'm like, oh, God.
Come on.
Keep seeing the therapist. Great.
You don't need to be invited, Bobby.
You're personal friends with him. You didn't invite him. So what's it say about
He actually said he wants to be on the podcast, too. So we'll have to get him on. Yeah.
Maybe next week.
I'm going to shoot him a message and be like, hey, Derek, put me on the podcast before you. So hope you're listening, Bobby Duke.
Yeah. No, he's got better things to do.
I've got 700 Instagram followers. That's a flex right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, show him. Bobby. So.
Yeah, I'll show him. Yeah.
I don't know what I want to put as my watch. I've been watching a lot of different stuff because of all this fucking time on airplanes.
Not Whistling Diesel.
There's no Whistling Diesel video for me to watch. I'm devastated. That being said, though.
Did you see?
What?
The Carolina squat is officially no more in North Carolina.
It's illegal. Good for him.
Yeah.
Did you see that he got another? Did you see that he got another Toyota Hilux? And I mean, I was thinking about this when he put out his Hilux videos. I was thinking, like, there's got to be an importer who could really capitalize on just calling him up and saying, we'll just give you a truck if you promote us, because Toyota Hilux values literally tripled when he made that video. Like, I saw people selling them on Long Island for like $12,000 rotted out, like pieces of shit. So he posted the other day on his main page, a picture of a Hilux, and he tagged a Instagram called Japanese Classics, who imports Japanese cars and sells them in the States. And I guarantee you they're just like making money doing this. And Whistling Diesel can be the one that helps, you know, and I can't wait to see what he does with his next Hilux. So I'm a huge Whistling Diesel fan. I did a little homage to Mr. Whistling Diesel this weekend. Jordan, I'll share the clip with you, but everybody else is going to have to wait. I think I'm going to put it out on Friday. We'll do a quick reaction preview, and Jordan can react while he watches it on my webcam. Hold on. All right, ready?
I'm ready. Oh, no, you didn't.
Yes. The clip from inside is even better. Coming soon to an Instagram near you, you can watch what I did to pay homage to, here you go, Jordan, to pay homage to Whistling Diesel.
Nice.
It goes fast. There's no time to waste. But anyway,
yeah,
so my,
for your post,
So what I've been watching, I started watching Keith Rucker, working on Jimmy's Bandsaw, but what I really want to talk about is Pask makes, did you see the video where it's called Any Shaped Holes with a Regular Drill?
Unreal.
He's so smart.
Unreal.
He's such a smart guy.
Yeah, he is, man. He's hardcore.
He makes me feel like a nothing maker. Like, I know that's not his goal, but I watch his videos and I'm like, that dude made the bandsaw that he's making these tools from. Like, I'm a nothing maker.
He's awesome. He's a super talented guy. Love his videos. And I love that he's like going so out of bounds from what I think anybody would have expected him to do. you know, like when I started watching him, he was doing the Scrapwood thing, and I was like, I was always impressed by it, but it was
dude, that was supposed to be seven videos.
Yeah, he's made that was like supposed to be
seven
right?
videos. Just to, yeah, because everybody loved it and they flipped out. I've been watching him forever.
Yeah, he's about he's funny. Close to the million. He's getting close to the million mark, which he deserves every bit of it.
His propeller video from like a month ago, that was ridiculous. I mean, perfectly balanced propeller made completely by hand. He's a master.
Yeah, he's very talented.
Whether he would admit it or not.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. He's a professional photographer, I think, by his day job.
Really?
Believe it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's a professional photographer as a job.
He's a foot photographer, right? He takes professional photography of feet.
Yes, he's a foot photographer. That's right. He's an Australian foot photographer.
That's perfect. Right. All right. We'll wrap it up on that.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. Check us out on Patreon. Patreon.com/handmadepodcast. Now, I want to apologize to the two members of the $25 Patreon tier. Unfortunately, nobody noticed because I did not get the email that anybody had joined the tier. So we'll owe you some sort of reconciliation to
two avocados.
I'm not going to say who these people are because we need full... We need like a real level of like secrecy and like this vault to make sure that nobody violates the circle of trust that is the pre-show. So I'm not going to say who you are, but the two people that joined the pre-show, very sorry for not including you on this one. This was a little bit of a shit show of an episode anyway. Jordan's going to send you some toenail clippings and a piece of his hair. So that'll come in the mail any day. And thank you guys for listening. Check us out on Patreon. Check out Derek from pizza.com and twoavocados.com something, right?
Dot net. Twoavocados.org. The .org.
Okay.
It's actually, it's to find my business, you type in
Derek from Alden.
Yeah, DerekFromAlden.com.
And you scrap all that and go to two avocado signs, and you'll find the quality stuff.
Sounds so healthy.
I think I might buy two avocados with two O's and have it point. I'm going to buy every variation of twoavocados.com that's close, and I'm going to point them all to Derek from Alden's website.
Thank you.
Please. It would be amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, if you haven't bought a Derek from Alden t-shirt, I sent Derek a free GoPro stand, and he made me buy a t-shirt myself. So $25, you can get yourself a t-shirt and feel good about it.
They're worth every penny.
That's right.
Thank you.
Good night.
T-shirts made in Indonesia by children. So have a
good night. Goodbye. We got to go. Thanks for stopping by.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.